Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Are we exposed? Security teams ask this every day. Vulnerabilities across network, cloud, AI, and OT silos hide the truth, and attackers are watching. Tenable unifies your tools, teams, and data so you can spot and close risks fast. Tenable's AI-powered exposure management gives teams one view of risk, helping them focus, take action, and close critical exposures fast. Visit Tenable.com. Tenable, your exposure ends here.
Welcome back to the Ryer on YouTube channel, where it is time for Aftermath, this time following the Alabama Crimson Tide season-ending loss to those Indiana Hoosiers out in the Rose Bowl, 38-3, a historic differential in score for Alabama. On the wrong side of that, as the Crimson Tide finishes its at 11-4, so did net a couple more wins than in year one for Kalen DeBoer, but still a disappointing finish, to say the least. Not so much that Alabama lost to the nation's top-ranked team on such a big stage, but the manner in which it went down is something that will not sit right with many, many, many Alabama fans, I'm guessing, for a long time to come. Some of you had already populated the show chat before I even jumped in here. So we appreciate you doing that. Chad's in here. I see already. Also Jack, Unknown Damone, Jack, Seth King, C. Robbins, I believe, is in here too. So you can jump in. Sure, there won't be a thing or two to talk about after this one, right? But again, before you really get going and you start sort of the take apart of Alabama for this performance out in Pasadena, you got to give credit to Kurt Cignetti and the Indiana Hoosiers, legit in every sense of the word. And you know, that's with Alabama getting off to a pretty positive start. Didn't go down the field and get points, but did move the football at least somewhat early. It wasn't the sort of scripted dynamic starts that we saw in the first half of the season when it was almost like you could set your watch by Alabama going down and getting into the end zone before really mid-October or late October, I guess. Maybe late October is when that problem started to rear its head more than anything. But defensively, you come out, give Indiana some different looks than what you had put on tape. You're able to affect Fernando Mendoza, the Heisman Trophy winner, a couple times. Three first half sacks, four tackles for loss. But ultimately, some of the same old that has proven problematic for this Alabama football team, starting with really the lines of scrimmage in general. I know most people, and I understand it, you think about this Alabama offensive line, I'm not even going to come close to trying to tell you that this group, in terms of expectations, came anywhere close to meeting what we saw or heard a lot of back in the preseason. Now, you know, Caden Proctor was your 2025 Jacobs Blocking Trophy winner. So there was that, but even for him, I think it came up short in terms of what you were thinking he might be able to do with this offensive line, Chris Kapilovic, the offensive line coach. So, you know, we're going to get into all of that as we get further away, from this January 1st performance against Indiana, but just in terms of starting with today, same old, too many areas. Alabama in terms of a run game, really non-existent. Ty Simpson, your leading rusher, played a little more than two quarters and change because, of course, late in the second quarter, he takes the big hit, ends up suffering what we would learn after the game was a fractured rib, according to x-rays. That showed up for him, and then it was Austin Mack time. I give Austin Mack some credit. Some ways it was, well, I think there was a small faction of the Alabama fan base that was hanging on to this, you know, Atlanta January 2018 sort of scenario where you went to the bullpen at halftime with Tua Tagovailoa. And that's been, you know, this sort of scenario had been bannered about by some, even late in the regular season. And my sort of counter to all that was, great, now what about all the guys around the quarterback? And I wasn't of the opinion that if Ty Simpson was, you know, at least close to 100%, do you get him out of the game? Now, if it's totally an injury situation and it's a legit injury, then sure, you consider making that change more so. But if it's a matter of playing through some hurt and some pain, then, you know, you stick with your guy. But, you know, Matt came in, game was pretty much already over. So it wasn't as if you were realistically thinking he could do something along those lines from 7 or 8 years ago. You know, that was a different game too. And again, different people around the quarterback all those years ago than there were in this game. But Simpson finishes 12 of 16, just 67 yards. Daniel Hill, 5 carries, 13 yards. I mean, I don't need to run through all this with you, do I? Total yards, IU doubles up the Crimson Tide, 407 total yards. And that Saban-era balance that you saw a lot of. And I'm not going to tell you that they were all this way under Nick Saban. I know there were stinkers under Nick. Before you come at me in the chat with, you know, Nick had his too. Yeah, he did. But this finishing close for the Alabama offense, you didn't see that many in a row that I recall of in that era. And so less than 200 total yards for Alabama. The balance for Indiana, something that concerned you going into this game, played out to be that case. Fernando Mendoza only had to throw the ball 16 times. He attempted 16 passes. Now, he had more dropbacks than that. Probably 20-plus dropbacks. I'm sure he did because he was sacked on three of those that weren't pass attempts. But he does throw for 192 and 3 touchdowns, was able to get the explosive plays going to some of his favorite guys. He had 3 receivers, 3 different receivers with receptions of 30 yards or more. Surratt, the other, had a catch of 24 yards. And so it ended up being far too easy for the Indiana Hoosiers in this quarterfinal matchup. Defensively for Alabama, some good stuff early again. You know, kind of got after Mendoza. But once that happened, I figured, well, Indiana's going to answer that by getting heavier into the run game. And as an extension of that, the quick game too, because they had seen Georgia. Like, you're seeing Georgia tonight with the quick perimeter throws, short throws, really hurting Ole Miss with some of that in the first half of the Sugar Bowl tonight. You did see some of that from Indiana as well. Bray Hubbard with his typical type of statistical production, 8 total tackles to lead Alabama, 7 of those solos. He had a sack. He had another half tackle for loss in the game. LT Overton manages to play in this game after, you know, missing time with that undisclosed illness. He has 7 total tackles in the game. Alabama with 3 sacks, 5 tackles for loss at the half. You know, that was 3 and 4 for Alabama. 3 sacks, 4 tackles for loss. Whereas, you know, Indiana.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
I think had maybe 1 sack, no sacks, and 1 tackle for loss. But by the time it ended in the second half, Indiana turned it up in terms of negative plays as well. But I think we can all agree, even at 10-0 there later in the second quarter, there was still a flicker of hope, even though your heart was telling you this is very much the kind of game Indiana wants because it's being played more in relation to physicality and lines of scrimmage. Alabama still had an opportunity there late in the second quarter to make it a 1-score game, whether it was getting in the end zone or maybe getting 3 before the half. But you get the big hit on Ty Simpson. Give him credit. He's trying to make a play. But the fumble issue crops up once again for the quarterback for Alabama. And, you know, Indiana goes right down the field, gets in the end zone, come out to start the second half. You know, you're thinking maybe you can get something going, but you're kind of wondering about the health status of Ty coming out of the break. I think you saw pretty quickly. You got the sense, the team sense, it wasn't happening for Ty coming out of the break, because there was no juice for Alabama coming out of that halftime locker room. And then Indiana just did what good teams do. They just took the game by the throat. And Kirk Cignetti, again, just can't say enough about the job the former Alabama wide receivers coach has done, not just in Bloomington, but those other couple of stops where he has done nothing, as he has said in that viral clip. He wins, and he won again against Alabama on Thursday afternoon. Let's get into some of the comments. Chad Anderson here chiming in. What a bummer, he says, of a way to end the season. Let's face it, this team outperformed their limitations all season. Hats off to the players and coaches for searching for answers all year and fighting. That's a classy way of looking at it, Chad. I think there is certainly some truth to your statement. I think there is, you know, also going to be the belief that this team didn't outperform on some occasions to its ability and to what it had available to it. I think it was very much a weird year. That's what I'll say about it. And even just from the record standpoint, 11-4, I checked. Alabama's never had an 11-4 record in the history of its football program. And really, even last year at 9-4, Alabama's never been 9-4, but if you want something to feel better about, even where last year's record is concerned, it's been 4-9 before. You know, go back to the start of the Mike Shula stint in Tuscaloosa. You can find that one. But 11-4, we've talked about it here on the channel in the past about this season for Alabama. Weird in a lot of ways, because if you talk about the games at Alabama that you tend to believe you need to win year in and year out, Alabama did a pretty good job of that. If you need to beat Georgia, they beat Georgia. You know, if you need to beat LSU, beat LSU. If you need to beat Tennessee, beat Tennessee. You need to beat Oklahoma, beat Oklahoma. Now, some of those games were two-game series, as we know, Oklahoma and Georgia, but just in terms of Auburn being on that list, obviously, just in terms of as a head coach at Alabama, the games you need to win, if I just listed out the teams that Alabama beat this season, I think a lot of people would say, well, that's a hell of a year. But it doesn't have sort of that feel to it. Not when you fall on a big stage like today by 35 points. And, you know, again, we'll talk more about what might happen, what could happen, what did happen in the days and weeks to come, because there's really no time to sort of feel bad or sorry for yourself. This portal thing is cranking up. You're going to have movement in the coaching ranks. I think a lot of Alabama fans are going to have their eyes on Kalen DeBoer to kind of, you know, see what type of introspection takes place, both from a roster and a coaching staff perspective. You know, it was believed that Alabama was truly the beneficiary of being able to recruit the vast majority of the players it wanted back from a year ago back for 2025. Now, in retrospect, you know, in some of those instances, that absolutely, more than some, quite a few, I'd say, it turned out to be a very, very important thing. You've had some years individually for this team, both as a roster and a coaching staff, that didn't live up to it, to be quite honest with you. And how Kalen DeBoer and this staff goes about surveying that, you know, and perhaps making some changes that are even of the eye-opening variety, and not just in terms of on-the-field stuff. You know, every aspect of this program as a head coach, Kalen knows this. By the way, there has to be very legitimate and thorough and honest introspection done. Now, you got to be willing to do that. And there has to be some urgency. I'm not saying that you throw everything out. You throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. But if you've got uncertainties about certain areas of your program, it's not a thing to kick the can down the road with. I've seen that before. I've seen fool's gold in some situations, in some previous staffs from long ago. Well, you know what? Look, finished with double-digit wins, won the bowl game. Staff's fine. Everything's fine. You know, don't make changes when you have the, when you really have the hammer in your hand to be able to do what you want to do with your program. Because if you don't do it when you want to do it, there's a chance you'll be told to do it, or you may not even get to do it at some point down the road. I don't think that's something that Kalen DeBoer has to even have in his mind at this point. It'll just be interesting. Just going to be like the rest of you. Going to be very interesting to see the approach he takes with his on the field and off the field staff. And then from a roster perspective, you know, will there be a similar situation to a year ago when the vast majority of guys with eligibility came back? And I'll tell people this too, roster, coaching staff, I don't think it always should be where everybody comes back or everybody that you think you want comes back. Because sometimes that makes me wonder, well, is it too much for everybody? Is that
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Alabama, too much for every. It shouldn't be. Alabama shouldn't be for everybody. You know, should be damn hard. You think it's easy at Georgia? Think it's easy at places like Ohio State? It's not. It's not. And so we'll see how that goes. That's not to say that you can't get the vast majority of your guys back and it be the right guys. But sometimes change is good for everybody. Jack here chiming in says, I miss being able to run the damn football. I think you've got a lot of company here on the show tonight as we're live, Jack, that echo that same sentiment. And it's really amplified when you go against a team like Indiana that does run it like it does. You know, that's what hurt, I think, a lot of Alabama fans today, was that in a lot of ways, Indiana, little old Indiana, you know, Dabo likes to use little old Clemson. Well, it's real with Indiana, little old Indiana, or at least before this last couple of years anyway, you know, had two backs, not one, but two nearly hit the 100-yard mark. Black, Kalen Black with 99 yards and a touchdown, and then Hemby. And they split it. And that feels like Alabama football, right? That feels like in a stadium like that one today, that feels like Ingram and Richardson a little bit, doesn't it? Or it feels like Henry and Yeldon in 2014, or Lacey and Yeldon. Kind of feels that way, a little too uncomfortable. You know, Indiana's receivers coming into this game, we talked about on the channel, one of the things that really stood out was their ability to go up and get it. I thought Charlie Becker on that first touchdown against Day-Day Jones, that was an example. That wasn't a great throw, I'd say, from Mendoza, because Becker really routed Jones up pretty good, and you didn't have any middle-of-the-field help. So tough spot for Jones to be in there. Pretty easy throw and catch, and you know, Becker goes up and gets it. Three different Indiana receivers with three touchdown catches, and they were the guys that you went into the game understanding that these would be the three guys, Becker, Cooper, and Surratt. And it still it still did not matter. Pretty crazy, too. Just two penalties combined between the teams in the game today. Alabama, one penalty for 5 yards, and IU, one penalty for 10 yards, 22 first downs for IU. And I get it. The Alabama offense, once again, did the Alabama defense no favors. I get that. You know, going for it from your own 34 there in the first half. You kind of got to where you expect that from Kalen. 240-pound back in the Wildcat. You know, I like that. If I feel like I've got a real 240-pound back that can go get me a yard. But then you run jet sweep out of that. Hindsight, all those things. You got into this sort of tit-for-tat with timeouts about running the punt team out there. I thought maybe the look to go for it was from the punt shift when you went with Ty under center. I thought maybe just sneak that right there. But it's just one of those things. Nothing worked out. You set up Indiana on some short fields there in the first half, and the Hoosiers made it hurt. What else do we got here? Chad chimes back in. Think Crowell will fix what ails you, Jack. Or I'm hoping so. Can't believe Jam got no carries tonight. Yeah. You know, I'd say this, you know, I'd say that Crowell will, if he can do just what the basics are off the ball, you got to think the opportunities are going to be there. You know, you got to think that the outstanding incoming freshman will have that opportunity to really impact that backfield. We did see a little bit of Kevin Riley in the game. It just, you know, he's been out for an extended period of time with that broken jaw. Unknown Damone chimes in. There's a reason Grubb was run out of Seattle after only 11 months. Yeah. I mean, that was, and we talked about that at the time that Grubb was hired by DeBoer, was that the people up there in the Northwest were not happy about what they perceived to be a lack of commitment to the run game. End of the day, though, you know, Kalen's an offensive guy too. It's kind of like when Saban and the defense didn't play well. You know, everybody get after the defensive coordinator at the time or positional coaches on the defensive side of the ball, but you know, Nick, the defensive guy of all defensive guys, really, in college football history. But yeah, I mean, Crowell should have every opportunity to come in. I think you still got to figure out the offensive line situation. I mean, you can't go into next season, even if Proctor goes to the NFL as expected, you know, knowing what you're going to lose with some veterans there in that interior. And I understand it takes time to sort of sort things out, and with the transfer portal and all those things, I don't want to say that Alabama's next starting center isn't on campus, or, you know, if it isn't Brailsford, or the offensive guard positions. But boy, that's where I think your eyes have to be. And I think you've got to really look at how you're being developed in that area and say, okay, is this the right direction that we're going right now in terms of the voices that these guys are taking it from on a daily basis. Seth King already wants Scott Huff tomorrow. Says he doesn't want to be coaching tight ends. Want to get the band all the way back together, right, Seth? Grubb and Huff. C. Robin says, we got a country boy ass whooping. It was. Yeah, I mean, that was Larry Bird, even though he left Indiana pretty quick before he went to Indiana State. That was John Cougar, Mellencamp. Who else from Indiana jumped in on that ass whooping? Seth also says improvement from last year playing with house money. I'm okay with this, he says. Yeah, I mean, in terms of wins and place in the playoff and win a game in the playoff, it is. We said that after the Oklahoma game. You know, we went as far as that after the Oklahoma game to say, no matter what happens, this is an improvement from last year. I think it is, but boy, And part of the problem too was there was actually a lot of confident self-talk that we were hearing from Alabama going into this game. You know, gosh, everybody's getting healthy. And then right before kickoff, we get the report that, oh, by the way, you know, you're talking about one of your key pieces, in Quavis, Josh Quavis, being a game time decision. You know, we learned that right before kickoff. That was kind of a buzzkill, wasn't it? And I give Quavis a lot of credit. You need more Josh Quavises. And I'm not just talking about tight ends. I think that's the kind of guy. That is the kind of guy. If you wonder if Kalen DeBoer recognizes the kind of players he needs or this program needs, Josh Quavis tells me he understands that, because Josh Quavis is one of those kind of guys. Sure he did. I was there, Santa Clara. Jack commenting, Saban lost to Clemson 44-16. Damn right he did. Oh, gosh. What else do you guys want to talk about? CC's not feeling it. He says it was a humiliation. Tough one. Tough one for the self-esteem and the ego, especially after, you know, that stretch from 2008 to 2023. And I know some folks, I still get this from folks. I still have a hard time getting my head around it. There are still some folks that attribute some of what happened today to Nick Saban, it being partially Nick Saban's fault. Explain that to me. And I understand there, you know, at the end there with Nick, and I'm not saying Kalen DeBoer has to be Nick Saban. I tweeted this out on X, or X'd it out, whatever it is now, that, you know, and I meant this from a perspective of the noise. Now, Kalen DeBoer already deals with a lot of noise just because of who he followed at Alabama. But then you follow that guy and the five remaining coaches in the college football playoff after you get hammered by 35 are all Nick Saban guys who do it in large part the Nick Saban way. And that was what I meant by that. Was that it's just something else, you know, and not that it may bother him, Kalen DeBoer, but it's just something else. And it makes me actually respect Kalen DeBoer more for, again, taking the job to begin with. You know, when he took the job, I thought, well, you know, give the guy credit. Look at who he's following. Well, hell, because Nick's got so many guys now around college football, it's almost like Kalen DeBoer's coaching against Nick Saban. And he does have wins over those guys, by the way. I understand that. Washington, he had wins over Steve Sarkisian. He had wins over Dan Lanning. The problem at Alabama is that this isn't the Pac. This isn't the old Pac-12. You know, there's just the gauntlet. And it just felt like, I said this after the Georgia game, it just felt like 12, 13 games in, it really started to show up. If you're not a striker and you're catching strikes, it's going to be tough once you start getting deeper into that SEC pool and going to 9 games next year too, by the way, going to 9. So if you're catching strikes in an 8-game SEC season with a conference championship game on top of it, what's going to be left of you as a football team? CC says he agrees with critics who say we don't seem to have an offensive game plan, just a series of plays. It's hard, you know, when you don't have a legitimate run game, it's hard to build off of, you know, play to play. And it does feel that. It's very random. It felt very random. I did think at times earlier in the season when Alabama could run the football at least a little bit, I still think the best thing I saw from Alabama offensively during the course of this season was under center play action, and being able to hit those daggers and those deep and those intermediate crossers. That was the best thing I saw. Now, that was in the first half of the season. Adjustments get made, middle of the field gets shut down, and you know, it's on you to kind of make the adjustment. The big, you know, the thing with Indiana too, and this is where Oklahoma is nothing like Indiana. Indiana isn't going to give you anything. You know, so when it got to 10 to nothing today, 17 to nothing, in the second half, you were going to have to be lights out in all three phases to have a chance, because that's a very detail-oriented, disciplined football team. I'll also say this, and this is to Kirby's, you know, I'm not trying to glaze all these other coaches as if to degrade Kalen, but it's not just how they call games on offense and defense. It's how they manage and call games complementary to each other. You know, now that Georgia's got it going offensively and they've got their offensive line healthy at the right time, you don't see Mike Bobo getting, you know, hold my beer mode. Okay. I mean, the beauty is in the simplicity. It's just really math. You know, you get the numbers you want and the look you want. And at a place like Georgia, as should be the case at a place like Alabama, Ohio State, Miami's doing this too. They get the numbers right and they just allow the physicality to take over. And that's what's, I think that's what's missing from Alabama too. And you hear me say that and you think, well, he's talking about the offense line. No, that's a part of it. When I watch Georgia block on the perimeter with London Humphrey and the tight ends, when they get them flexed out there in space, it's a different deal. You know, that's kind of been masked a little bit, or it was for a while because of Josh Quavis, was that you would see him do things during the course of the game. You say, oh, Alabama's fine at the tight end. Some of these teams got two or three tight ends and they're able to turn these quick game tosses and touches and things like that into big, big plays. And it's not just that they seem to like each other. They play for each other, which means on the perimeter, guys block for the other guys and do all the dirty type of things, the dirty work that's required. And that's, to me, when you talk about physicality at Alabama, I think about it in every phase of both sides of the ball. They got to be more physical up front. If you're a 240-pound back, you got to be a 240-pound back on every play. If you're a wide receiver, you got to be physical in the quick game. You know, if you're a tight end, it's great if you can get out in space. Can you get on your guy, you know, and block in line and in space? Defensively, it's great if you can set an edge, but if your DB is still in the 14th game or 15th game of the season or taking bad angles or losing leverage, it doesn't really matter much. Let's see here. What else do we got? C. Robbins chiming back in, said Max first drive was impressive with a big arm standing tall in the pocket and could run to extend plays. Indiana looked like an old Saban team. Yeah, that's what I said about Indiana going into this. I thought they looked 2009-ish UA. And I agree. I give Austin Mack credit. Yeah, I mean, you can say the game was pretty much already decided, but for that guy, you know, who knows what his future is. But to be in the moment and be ready, that told me a lot about Austin Mack. You know, he didn't look like a guy who hadn't done his preparation and all of a sudden I'm in the game. He looked ready. I think there's also something to be said about not taking hits like Ty Hitt took over the course of 14 plus games. There's a freshness to a guy that hasn't been dimmed down a pretty good bit. I thought that showed up too. I thought even in the Eastern Illinois game, you could see some of that when Austin Mack got his chance, Keelan Russell got his chance. Just, you know, they were crisp physically. They hadn't taken the hits of a season even to that point. And it shows, because when you don't have a run game, the analogy I like to make is when you're 21 and you get a credit card, it's fun as hell with that credit card. It's fun for about 30 days. And then in about 10 days, that first bill comes for that credit card. And it wasn't nothing free. And ultimately, the bill comes due. If you can't provide some semblance of balance. And today, situationally, if you're not going to be 150 rushing yard per offense type of group, situationally, you got to be elite. And, you know, again, look at the Georgia game, 4th and 2. And you're having to throw or you feel like you have to throw outside the numbers for 2 yards. Today, you put a 240-pound back in the Wildcat and you run jet on 4th and 1. So ultimately ended up Alabama wasn't good enough situationally either. What else do we have? LC says he needs a full-blown quarterback battle in the spring. I need to know what the roster's even going to look like before I can even think about the spring. And what the heck is even spring practice going to look like anymore? It's wild because, you know, I'm still seeing mock drafts tonight with Ty in the first 15 picks. I saw one today that had Ty Simpson going top 12 to the Dolphins. And then I hear some folks say he shouldn't even be starting at Alabama. It's a gulf for sure in terms of evaluations for Ty Simpson. And how does this depth situation play out? You know, Austin Mack, Keelan Russell during the week, I thought they said all the right things in terms of the big picture, but who knows now? Now it gets real where the portal and the potential for real movement takes place. Silverblade here. Most frustrating team to watch in a long time. They just could never really improve. Just seemed to watch the same struggle every game. Can't believe how bad the run game was all season. Yeah. I feel you, Silver. I think that's a frustration echoed by a lot of Alabama fans now that it's over. And especially, again, going back to South Carolina, I guess. And then moving through the month of November, I guess LSU, that performance offensively was when you really started to wonder about the bounce back and the ceiling ultimately because of Oklahoma coming up, even Auburn's defense, and then trying to project this team to something beyond the Iron Bowl. And it was, I mean, a lot of times it was a loop. I'll tell you, you speak of a loop. And I said this earlier about you're either delivering strikes or you're getting struck. You watch some of these teams in this playoff, like Miami, even though Ohio State lost that game to Miami, and it was a physical game, and give Miami credit. I thought they won those lines of scrimmage, but they didn't just blow it up on the lines of scrimmage. You know, they took some strikes too. I would put together a ton of cutups of Georgia. Even the shot the Ole Miss DB put on Gunnar Stockton on the play tonight. I mean, I thought he knocked Gunnar Stockton out. I'd just do cutups of strikes, people getting struck, and run that thing on a loop. Yeah, Chris, you know, that was interesting to hear him talk. It's tough in that situation immediately after a game like that. And Chris is saying here, please tell me DeBoer presser comments sound like what they are. Coaching changes are a coming. I could see why you would take that from his comments after the game. We'll see. You know, we'll see. I think everyone's got strong opinions, both on the field and off the field, where changes might be needed. But that's what we're going to find out about. You know, and Kalen made some changes last offseason. You know, some of these are going to be because guys are leaving. But yeah, in terms of guys that you know would like to be back, you know, how's that going to look? I think with an emphasis on the offensive side of the ball, you know, how's the dynamic going to work with the quarterbacks and the OC, and what's in store for this offensive line? Let's see here. Oh, Seth says it's not grub, it's the personnel. This line is too fat. Scott Jackson says no more ice cream trucks this summer. Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to get into shaming folks, okay? I'm not going to do that. I think you can still sort of, and we talked about it on this channel going back to the summer. You know, when guys are showing up at SEC Media Days and kind of boasting about being nearly 370 pounds in July, I didn't take that as a real positive back then. No, I'm not ready to go there. I'm not ready to go there. Comment here. Is this a program derailing loss like FSU suffered to us in 2017? No, I'm not ready to go to that extent. I still have seen enough from Kalen DeBoer as a head coach to think, you know, he can get the job done. You're chasing ghosts at Alabama too, man. It's tough. But like what we talked about earlier, the tough part too is it's not just that you're following Nick Saban. You're coaching against Nick Saban in a lot of ways in a lot of games. To get to where you want to go as a program, just look at what's left in this college football playoff. I'm not ready to throw Pete Golding in there, but even if you just want to say Lane, you know, with Ole Miss, Lane, Kirby, Dan Lanning, Sig, you know, maybe Pete. You know, that's kind of what you're going to need to navigate. Yeah, I mean, Ty's situation, that's where it starts from a roster perspective, I think. You know, how's that gonna set up moving forward? Yeah, the comment here we talked about earlier kind of too, the blowout losses are what is concerning to me. Last year, the OU blowout, this year, UGA, FSU, and Indiana, and our inability to run the ball at all. Yeah, I mean, in an offense like Alabama's this year, you're suspect to getting run out of the building because you can't control the game. You know, if you're not hitting thirds at a real high clip, and that's what's kind of odd too about Alabama's approach was how many fourth quarters did we see in close games this year though, where Alabama went on these 8-minute drives because they were able to keep the chains moving. But, you know, I don't let the defense off on all this either. I know relative to the offense, you look at it and say, well, boy, the defense actually statistically had a good year. They were bad today. I mean, they were bad. I mean, it started with the offense and the continued ineptitude early in games, but the defense didn't really answer it. You know, they came out aggressive and, you know, got after Mendoza, but you didn't get the sense that Indiana was ever really shook, you know, and part of that has to do with, they know it at some point they can get this thing back to their comfort zone, which is balance and running the football. All they need is another series. And if the offense for Alabama is struggling, they're going to get plenty of opportunities to get it on track. So it was once again, in DeBoer's first 28 games, I think it's 28, 9-4 last year, 11-4 this year. That's 20-8, even by my public school upbringing. You know, that's where you kind of wonder about it. as far as complimentary football. You know, I mean, really, where have been the extended stretches of complimentary football where everything feels like it's tied in, not just in terms of how you set things up with offensive play calls, but how the game is managed. It's just, it's splash and dash, you know, it's splash. And then, you know, now a stretch of it's random. And look, maybe year three is the year that it comes together. But team like Indiana, there's nothing fancy about it. They are who they are. And a big part of that is you're going to have to beat us. And we are going to be prepared in a way in which we don't think you're gonna be able to line up and do it. I mean, that was a make their ass quit type of performance today. What else do we have? You got some Jeremy Pruitt for DC talking here. Hey, look, regardless of what you think of Kane Womack, if Jeremy can free himself up, you know, there's a lot worse guys that you could do than Jeremy Pruitt. It's interesting, man. Again, with Ty, do I think Ty returns? I think Ty needs to return. I think it would do him well, but if he truly gets a first round grade, I think you almost have to go, you know, whoa. Unless you just want to play college football. And say this for the guy, he hung around. I mean, there is obviously some genuine affection for the University of Alabama. He certainly bided his time to get his shot. You get 1 year of that and you're ready to go in an NIL era where if the feeling is mutual with the staff and Ty, and you can certainly prosper enough financially, I think he needs to be back. I think his development, he would benefit more. I know after the way things finish this season, you're going to hammer me for saying this. I still think he could use another year. You know, it's kind of like Lenore Sellers of South Carolina. Yeah, it was a historic loss. It made me think about on a much lower scale. And one of the benefits of old age for me is, or maybe one of the downsides is that you can remember games like that Fiesta Bowl in what, 91 or so. That was the end of the 90 season, right? Browning Nagel in Louisville took Alabama to the woodshed out there in Tempe. Some of you folks want more fire out of Kalen in terms of his interaction with his players. Feel like he's too easy on his players. Seth says, we tend to forget Saban was really bad post-COVID. Those teams were awful. Wow. Check back with me on awful maybe in about 5 or 6 years, Seth. Let's do some inventory. Not to make this a comp with Saban at all, but I hear this. I do. I get this. How bad Saban was in 21, 22, and 23. Alabama won 2 SEC titles in those 3 years. One SEC title in 21, SEC title 23, played for the national championship in 21. I mean, yeah, if you want to say relative to 2008 to 2020, it wasn't up to that, fine. But you need to put an asterisk by awful and make sure people understand awful relative maybe to 2007. That was awful by any standard for Nick Saban. But 2021 to 2023 was awful. Two SEC titles. You know, the thing about SEC titles are when you're reeling them off like Alabama did with Nick Saban, they kind of get relegated to like ReliaQuest Bowl trophies, you know, like SEC title. But then when you go like Alabama did from about 92 to 2009, boy, you really celebrate that 2009 SEC title, don't you? Yeah, I mean, it's the nature of the position. Doc says Ty Simpson isn't the problem. Alabama is 7-5 without him. I think in that gauntlet, when he absolutely had to be the dude, there's no question. If he doesn't play to the level he does, this team probably, you know, I don't know if this team loses four games or loses more games than four, because if he doesn't play like he did in large part through that gauntlet, they don't get to Atlanta to lose to Georgia. They don't get into the playoff to lose the game to Indiana. So yeah, they're a four loss team, but would they have lost any more if he didn't play well in that stretch? Thomas says the fourth down debacle, should have punted after messing up. It was all downhill. The coaches look dumbfounded. I mean, it's really overtaking college football now, though, man. Did you see Oregon today? Did you see Dan Lanning? I mean, Dan Lanning was just chips in on all these fourth downs. Now, you know, Dan Lanning had the benefit of a defense that could really just stymie a high school offense that Texas Tech was running out there. So it's a little different dynamic. I understand that. But, boy, any game you want to turn on right now, the fourth downs are going for. Unless you got the damn Ole Miss kicker who had two bombs tonight in the first half from 55 and 56. And even that makes you wonder, well, would Lane have gone for those or would he have tried those field goals? Yeah, I mean, I thought Kalen's comments after the game were pretty interesting about that. He presented it in a way that he has confidence in his offense and his defense. But another way of looking at that is, well, if you feel that way about your defense, maybe put them in a better situation. I know his point is, we feel like even if we go for it and we don't get it, they can come out there and force a field goal. I still don't have as much confidence in Alabama's defense. If that's true, what he is saying, I kind of took it to mean that, you know, maybe you didn't have as much confidence in your defense and you felt like it, because he said that too. We felt like possessions were going to be of a premium. And then he proceeds to say, we got confidence in our defense. Well, if you really have confidence in your defense and you don't think, you know, the possessions are going to be at a premium, you can maybe make sure you put them in a better position. Yes, Keith, Ty has been beaten to death. I don't think there's much doubt about that. Almost anyway. Oh, gosh. Yeah, Nick isn't really on staff, okay? He's kind of in a nice role administratively. You know, he and Nick Saban are Steve Spurrier are kind of the same deal now. Spurrier's got this deal at Florida. They're pretty much ambassadors. And there, you know, Spurrier's in Gainesville. And he's accessible to anything and anyone really within that athletic department that wants to go there. I don't really, Thomas. I'm kind of like everybody else. You know, I'm intrigued. I'm interested to see where DeBoer goes from here. I am. I'm interested. It's so the it's so much of a different deal now, though. It's hard to really speak in definitive terms about the next season when you don't even know what the damn roster is going to look like. You know, it's like the SEC schedule reveal a couple of weeks ago. Who cares? Give me a roster reveal. Let me see a roster. Now, I will say this. You know, I do think offensively and defensively, I said this from the outset of the show, every aspect of the program needs serious introspection. Legitimate, not, you know, we'll give it another year. If you already feel that way about it, then you need to be sure about what you're going to do next. What do we got? Some of you want the strength and conditioning change too. That's been a popular refrain. I hear you. Unknown to moan always delivers here in the show chat. That was an interesting comment from Kalen about the line between Alabama and a national championship is a thin one. It was Grand Canyon wide today. Kickback MIA says biggest bowl game loss in Alabama football history was 72 Orange Bowl loss to Nebraska. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I vaguely recall that one. I think it was all of four when that game played out. I do remember the inaugural Music City Bowl in Nashville in 98. I'm sure a lot of you do too. And I remember Tempe in the early 90s. CC says Gunnar Stockton still looks fresh all these games in. Yeah, well, you know, when you can at least put some semblance of a run game out there and you have a quick game, you know, look at some of these throws Gunnar Stockton's making. I mean, he's flipping them out to Zach Branch, you know, Cash Jones out of the backfield. Bobo gets those numbers, you know, inside runs were a real problem for Ole Miss while I was watching in the first half. Ole Miss had to adjust and commit to the inside runs. Math on the outside opens up. Hit the quick game out to the flat. Everybody blocks for one another. Physicality in every area of the offense. And it's not that hard. Gunner runs as a complimentary runner. He does. He's a tough dude. I know that. I know he's a tough dude. But they've got three backs that they feel good about, maybe four. And they're getting their offensive line back at the right time. Now, Alabama tonight, you know, here comes Geno Vandermark to start the second half, you know, at left guard. There's some Jaden Roberts at right guard. You know, it never got figured out. And you still had free runners in the pass rush. You know, it still never really got it figured out in terms of pass protection throughout the year. Oh, gosh. Yeah, the blowouts are what bother you, folks. I get it. I don't see Freddie being the OC at Alabama. I love Freddie. Freddie Kitchens, one of my all-time favorite Alabama players. Tough, tough dude. Never thought he got enough love as a player at Alabama. I think Belichick just let him go at North Carolina, right? Brandon wants changes on both lines of scrimmage. He wants the offensive line and the defensive line. That surprised me tonight. I you know, if you watch the channel, you watch the shows, you know me more than anyone when it comes to the last two seasons now, two seasons complete. Edge setting, it's been like, in some instances, shockingly ineffective. And, but tonight, you know, it turned into a situation where even between the tackles, you know, Alabama was getting handled pretty good. I didn't expect that. Oh gosh, Donald chiming in here. What does he have to say? Travis, Bama has lost mental toughness and the edge to win these games. OL and DL have not been strong, especially OL. Well, I can't totally disagree with you on that, Donald. The proof through 28 total games to this point is kind of in the pudding, as they like to say. It's a callous. We talked about this after the Georgia game. I talk about it in terms of can you develop that callous through the course of a season, that when you get to the end of the race and things get really hard, you're calloused in a way to continue to fight on or chop on or whatever the hell you want to call it. And, you know, what we saw from this team was really good stretches of play, but at some point, yeah, toughness is a real thing. I know it gets used too much, I think, like it factor, whatever. But it, you know it when you see it, kind of like the it factor, I guess. Anything else before we get out of here? We're right at the 1 hour mark. Hey, always appreciate you jumping in here. If you haven't hit that subscribe button, hit it for us. Give us a like if you don't mind. We will have Talking Tide with Chase Goodbread, the Sunday Nighter. We're going to shoot for that on Sunday night. We'll have Talking Tide with Chase, sports columnist for the Tuscaloosa News. And it's been a fun year. It's always fun. Anytime I get to talk football, hang out with you folks, that's a good, good thing. Blessed to be able to do it. Blessed that you take the time to join us right here on Ryer on YouTube. Have a great rest of your New Year's night. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you again real soon right here on Ryer on YouTube. So long, everybody.